Welcome to Truth to Tell. I'm Andy Driscoll. Well, today we hope to speak to geeks and Luddites alike as we explore the interconnected future of the Twin Cities. How do we breach the digital divide, providing internet access to all citizens of the digital age, no matter their income or other status? Which of the several technologies planned and being used now can best serve the public interest at a reasonable cost? How to prepare for a future of global connections for government, business, and personal communications and data transmission? Sound complicated? It is indeed, but we'll try to keep it simple so you can help your cities decide how this should be done.
Truth to Tell. I'm Linnell Michelson.
St. Paul faced off pressure to make wireless available by the time it hosts the RNC and decided that instead they would hold off and look for a more thorough report on alternatives that they could use. And when they did, they strongly recommended a core structure of fiber optic cables that could be the superstructure for a wireless system.
Frustrated techies studying and working on this issue cite the failures of the squabbling and grasping United States cable, telco, and wireless corporations, whose influence on Federal Communications Commission, on the FCC, has led to policies they say have slowed our maturity in broadband development, placing us far behind the rapidly deploying technologies in Europe and Japan, whose systems are 3 and 4 times faster and more reliable.
So let's attempt then to bring some sanity to this discussion with our three guests who have come to our studio not to bury us, but enlighten us about the options and try to make sense of why to choose one system over the other and the pluses and minuses of public ownership versus private control over this public utility known as broadband.
Christopher Mitchell comes to us from the Institute on Local Self-Reliance and its New Rules Project, where he has authored a policy brief titled Municipal Broadband, Demystifying Wireless and Fiber Optic Options, which we sincerely hope he will do for us today. The Institute supports publicly owned networks and St. Paul's approach to fiber cable infrastructure. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
We also have Eric Lamplin, who is a network architect for Lookout Point Communications. Eric is, and his company has been working to help cities develop their municipal commons, places where everyone is networked and welcome to connect, including adding public information and other content to these networks for public consumption, like I assume local cable shows, broadcasting school plays, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Peter Fleck is with us as well. He's technology and web coordinator for the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Family Development. Peter, welcome. One of the things that I think everybody is concerned about is whether or not this ought to be actually owned by the city, the municipality that's funding it and supplying the services.
I mean, the context I've heard it in is like, let's say we're building roads. Do you let General Motors build your road? Do you limit it to one vendor, or do you build a road that anyone can drive
on?
There's
some of that.
And then the idea is that that at this point, broadband technology is as key to living in anywhere, and especially in a city, as electricity, a road. It's part of the infrastructure. And so the question is, who should own it? Right?
Absolutely.
This is Christopher Mitchell.
I think that's a very good question. And the answer is that the communities that relied upon Earthlink and MetroFi to build their networks and own them and do all the work are being left behind now.
And you look at the future, fiber is the future. But does that mean that in order to have that, say, in St. Paul, the city has to dig? Yeah, has to basically dig up the streets and connect us house by house? Kind of like a cable company?
Well, that's certainly one approach. You can put it in the ground. You can actually put it on telephone poles. And those are the same methods that you currently use to deliver DSL phone company copper wire or coaxial cable from a cable company. That's all the same method.
So can I point out an additional method?
Yes, please.
Which I've just heard about is in some rural areas. People have this perspective of fiber being very fragile. And when they use it in aerial deployments, it's very strong. It's much stronger than other wires. And in Vermont, in one area, they're going to be running a fiber cable through trees to get to a house that's not even electrified. They run off a generator, but they're going to put a fiber connection to it.
So that's Christopher Mitchell of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We have Peter Fleck with us, who's been working with the Minneapolis Wi-Fi thing, and Eric Lampland, who is a longtime consultant in the business of networking.
So if this is the future, is the main question then who's going to fund the infrastructure, who's going to actually pony up the money to first string these things, and whether it's private versus public? And anyway, I want to talk about that.
Chris Mitchell.
Absolutely. There's one company that's doing it, Verizon, a major company, I should say, that's doing it. And they're responsible for most fiber connections in the United States. But more importantly, from my perspective, is the 40 to 50 communities that have already started doing this. And locally, Monticello has just started on this project. Windham, way out in southwest Minnesota, has been a fiber community for a long time. And there's folks up on the Iron Range who are considering it, may very well have far better connections than we have in St. Paul and Minneapolis, because they understand the power of it, and they're going to do it themselves because they recognize
the power of fiber optic.
The power of fiber optics. And they recognize that no private company is going to come up there and build out in a rural area in the way that they can do it themselves to make sure that they have the best network possible.
Eric, you've been working with a lot of cities outstate as well, haven't you?
Yes. And Chris has mentioned a lot of the very early people who have gotten into the fiber activity. There are about 50 cities in and around the Twin Cities area that I work with today who are looking closely at this question. There are other private builds in southeastern Minnesota with Hiawatha Broadband, and a city that I work with is Red Wing right now, is considering this particular development. So the activity is very high. A lot of it, going back to Glenn's question when he called in, is actually motivated by economic development. A city that does not have an appropriate infrastructure in terms of communications today is no different than a city that does not have highways going to it in 1950.
Telephone systems.
Telephone systems. It's analogous in very many ways. And this public-private conversation has been had in the United States about electricity, about sewer systems, about railroads,
Water.
And
to this very day, we have sort of a hybrid across the country of municipally owned systems, privately owned systems, many of them monopolies, regulated monopolies. So this is, in fact, a utility, isn't it?
It is, in fact, a utility, and it is, in fact, going to be different depending upon the conditions of a local community. So in some cases, they're served very, very well by the private sector. In other cases, they need to plunge ahead and do it themselves.
Is this in part what needs to be done because we simply we're not exercising the let's say the right of the public because of our rights of way and because the trunks are there and we're helping to fund it? We're just not getting the return on our investment sufficiently from some private entities to make it truly a public system, Christopher?
I think it goes a little bit deeper than that. I think that in the past, we've recognized that to be a strong country, we need to expect our governments to maximize social benefit, and we need to expect private companies to maximize profit for their shareholders. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that system. But now we're looking at a situation where we're trying to get private companies to maximize social good and government to make a profit, and that is a very poor model. And so what we need to do is we need to run this like a utility. We need to have the city build it so that they can manage it, make sure that a single company isn't making decisions that will hurt the community. And then we can have a number of different competitors on that network. And this is something we're going to get to, I know, today, is the idea of an open network. So you have many different competitors. You don't just choose between one cable company and a phone company, but maybe three service providers of this or 10 of that.
Apparently, it's been by design that individuals and even companies have not been able to upload things off their systems onto the net anywhere near as fast as the downloads. I think Chris talks about this in his report.
for a community radio station like this, I think we should be very sensitive to the power of democratizing media. It's something that I think probably everyone listening to this show wants to see. And having a symmetrical connection that allows you to upload very fast is key to that. Now more than almost any other time, we have more power to create our own media and to create our TV shows or more likely audio. Mm-hmm. And that competes with someone like Comcast, which owns many media producing properties.
There you go. It's sort of like the individual is now becoming a competitor to the big cable companies out. Right now, we have a phone call from Richard in Maplewood. Richard?
Andy, this is Richard Lee, the sheriff, who spent hours and hours with you at the National Conference for Media Reform.
Thank you, Lee, for calling. How are you?
I'm just recovering. Thank you.
Yeah, we're all. I almost didn't make it today. All right, go ahead.
Well, there were several sessions that I attended, and many of the speakers in other sessions stressed how important it is not only for social justice in our society, but for economic competitiveness, between states and between countries, broadband is. And we were alarmed to hear that, for example, since 2005, the United States has dropped from 5th to 14th in overall broadband capacity and speed, which is outrageous while we're spending trillions of dollars around the world in military adventures. Fortunately, our Minnesota legislature has glommed onto this issue. This past session, a bill was passed to provide a planning policy director and an advisory committee to build out the entire state in broadband, and another bill was passed to provide for a mapping activity to facilitate that. And then in February of this year, thanks to the Minnesota legislature, all of the state's public television stations are now connected by high-speed fiber optic cable so that they can exchange broadcast all over the state. So this program is vitally important. Thank you very much for doing it.
Well, Lee, thank you very much for that additional information. And Christopher, I know you're a policy guy.
Yes.
So, and I know Eric is probably working with some of this stuff as well statewide. Let's talk a little bit about that connection. So go ahead, Christopher.
Well,
Mitchell.
The state has taken an interest in this arena, and I don't want to be too pessimistic about it. However, we've seen very few states do anything very positive in terms of really solving this problem.
All right.
And if I can start at the national level, we've seen no real movement towards solving this problem under the Bush administration in terms of really building out a communications infrastructure that we need. States have mostly ignored it, and when they've acted, they've really acted in the interests of existing phone and cable companies.
Mm.
And I really hope that's not the direction that we head down, although in some ways it seems as though this task force that the governor will be using may be stacked with those sort of interests. So this is why communities really need to take it upon themselves to make sure that they are looking out for their own interests, to make sure that they build the network that they need. We shouldn't have a private company choosing which communities get the infrastructure of the 21st century or deciding if they get it 10 years later than their neighbors or something along to that effect.
Christopher, is this sort of like saying we need better voting machines and then we have one vendor come in and say, this is the voting machine? Is it sort of like
that?
Yeah. Well, I have a fear that, as many other states have done, Minnesota will decide that the solution is to build out these DSL networks, which are asymmetrical. They're slower, and they won't be built for 3 to 5 years at a minimum. And so,
it's already obsolete technology.
That's exactly my point. And it's in the interest of a profit-maximizing corporation to offer those connections, but it's not in the interest of a community.
Eric, you look like you're bursting to say a little something. Are you talking about the same issues are confronting you in smaller towns like Red Wing?
I think the issue that Christopher was addressing is the correct one. we need to move to fiber networks, and we need to move to fiber networks fairly rapidly. This is not something that the rest of the world is waiting for us to do. They're proceeding, and they're doing so not only in the sense of speed and the new applications that will come across fiber, but in terms of cost reduction. It is normal for the networks in Europe and Asia to be substantially cheaper than those here in the United States.
I couldn't believe it. 27 cents per megabyte uploads of 150 megabits.
In
not
Japan.
Megabits in Japan.
Yeah.
27 cents where it's something like it's a couple, $3, something like that here?
Well, the numbers will vary depending upon the studies that you actually look at. Without a doubt, we can say that in the United States, we pay substantially more. For example, in France, you can receive what we recall a triple play, your voice services, your telephone services, your TV services. It's a minor TV service. And your internet service at a higher rate of speed than we were at all used to here. And that cost is about $45 a month for the entire package.
Christopher.
I wanted to say that it's true that we have many of these problems for those of us that have connections. But there's also an issue in communities with connecting people who are not connected. And and it's an issue that we've wrestled with, and it's something that there's no one solution. There's no two solutions. There's many interlapping problems that need to be solved. But I believe that community ownership of the network is really a key step in that direction. When we run this as a utility, we build streets. We don't expect them to pay for themselves. We build a fiber system, and it's going to offer a better payback. And we can use a lot of that money to really fund programs and try and deal with this digital divide. I think community technology centers are a step. I do have some fears that we can't limit ourselves to that. I wouldn't accuse anyone of doing that, but I want to make it very clear that we need to get everyone connected in their homes. A person, especially a single parent, rounding up their children and going to the community technology center when they get off their job, it's a disaster waiting in line. It's not an ideal solution. And I believe very strongly that the only way to get there is through a publicly owned system because it gives you more opportunities. You can, once you run that fiber to everyone's home, you can offer subsidized connections if you want to. You don't have to argue with anyone about it. You just say, we're going to subsidize connections for people who want to connect and live below the poverty line. And there's other technologies that are on the horizon, I believe, that are going to make it easier to teach people computer skills in the home and learn how to use it and troubleshoot it in their own homes, although technology centers will certainly be a key part of that, going being able to go out to neighborhood lessons. And
well, ahead.
Christopher, is the main barrier for – I mean, I'm sold the idea that municipal should own it so they don't have to be held hostage by these larger companies. Is the main barriers that the cities or their towns just don't want to put up with the capital investment?
It's very expensive. And I would say that not the municipality should own it necessarily, but that the community should own it. It could
What's
be a co-op,
difference?
It could be a nonprofit, it could be a utility, and it could be the municipality itself. The difference is if the government, the municipality runs it and a new mayor comes in and says, I don't want to do this anymore, it could be over. Whereas if you have a co-op, which actually serves, you know, at the is more directly accountable, then that's one option. A nonprofit may be specifically working in that area, and you would never expect them to change their mind about how to offer it.
Yeah, this is the thing that gets to me. Profits are always so important. Why can't we get past that?
Well, I think profits are very important to anyone who's in the business of making profit. The issue here is that communication networks have reached a level of public need as many other kinds of things have done. And we've had electric utilities, and we have models for those electric utilities that are quite oftentimes established as nonprofits or city departments or many other different models. So the same thing is likely to happen with communications.
Well, I just wanted to comment a little bit on what Eric's saying in terms that I too think that profit's an important definitely important, and companies have to have a way to continue on. But I think one of the problems in the U.S. broadband area is that several companies, AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast stand out, they want to continue to make the large profits they're making now by basically controlling our internet access. And also, on top of that, companies like Comcast, especially in Time Warner, want to control the content that's coming into our homes, too. And so they're, in my opinion, blocking us and holding us back from creating these networks. And often, when there's large municipal deployments around the United States, as soon as they finally get permissions and they finally get going and they finally get moving, AT&T or Comcast all of a sudden appears and also tries to wire the places they hadn't wired in the past until they actually had competition for
it. Or they serve a lawsuit. In the case of Monticello, which suddenly was just served and is being told by the phone company that they can't build this network. And that's
based
just,
on what?
They claim that the city is not allowed under state law to use revenue bonds to finance the network. And this is just patently absurd. And the idea that that this phone company is going to tell the city how it should build the infrastructure that it needs, I think, is crazy talk.
If I was in St. Paul and I hear that they're commissioned, they're studying for fiber optic, and I have the same concerns that have been raised. I want it open. I don't want to be my city beholden to a corporation. Who do I contact? What do I do at this point if I'm listening in?
Well, I think the best contact is your city council person. if that's a concern of yours, bring it forward
because it's
in a public
issue.
Way.
Yeah.
It is a public issue.
Absolutely. The city council is a great spot. You can talk to me. Working with other people, we're trying to get groups together to organize and understand why this is really in our interest, because it's something that the community is going to have to work toward and be involved in the decision-making process of. I'm at the New Rules Project, newrules.org. Click on the information button. That's my sector. And you can also contact me by email, christopher@ilsr.org, which is the Institute for Local Self-Reliance.
And Christopher is the good source on fiber optics in the public commons. And Eric, we want to thank you very much. We must leave it there. Our thanks to all of you from the techie world here. It's kind of wonderful.